The British COVID Inquiry has just published its second major report, 800 pages of it, after 2 years of hearings. And the verdict can be summed up in the line, too little, too late. 23,000 fewer people may have died had Downing Street acted earlier. And here in Ireland, well, instead of a statutory inquiry with witnesses under oath, we have an evaluation involving private hearings, no power to compel documents, and a report that may not even be published in full at all. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Tara Duggan. Ireland's COVID-19 evaluation has been running for months now, but you may not be aware of it. It's chaired by Professor Anne Scott, but it operates entirely behind closed doors, and key figures from the pandemic response will never face public questioning. Advocates for families bereaved in nursing homes say it's toothless. Others say the public deserves something stronger, not to point fingers necessarily, but to properly learn lessons before the next pandemic may hit. Those who favour the Irish approach say it avoids turning an evaluation process into a witch hunt. And today we're asking a simple question. Why does Ireland still not have a full statutory COVID inquiry? And what do we lose or gain by avoiding the kind of public scrutiny that we are seeing unfold in the UK? Shortly we'll hear from the Care Champions Advocacy Group and from an academic who's been researching pandemic responses right across Europe. But first, GP and News Talk Breakfast presenter Dr. Ciara Kelly sent us a voice note. Ciara has always been a strong critic of the government's handling of the pandemic. Here are her thoughts in the wake of the latest UK inquiry report.
I think what happened in the UK was a let it rip kind of an idea. It was very much at the time, there was a very reductive argument, health versus wealth and stuff like that, that was being said at the time, which I don't think truly captured what was going on. Lockdown versus no lockdown, I think, would have been a much better way to describe how COVID was being managed. I would have favoured less lockdowns here. I do think it's important to bear in mind that deaths at the time of COVID are not the only measure of how we all did in COVID. There are other measures I think that we should apply. I'm just uncertain that that kind of headline sort of a line is the best way to sum up any country's success, as it were, with COVID, the number of deaths at the time. I would say that we should have a very tough, a very transparent process. My feeling is I would rather something robust and I would rather something transparent happened, not just because there should be any kind of a consequence for people who were involved in it, but because I don't want to see us do the same thing again. And I do fear us doing the same thing again. I mean, there could be another pandemic, in which case there could be another NPHET, in which case there could be another set of kind of draconian lockdowns. I'm not sure if people would take them as well now as they did the first time. But one of the things I think that became quite apparent during the lockdown was at times it was almost like we were locking down to appease people's anxiety. There are people who exist in society who have a degree of anxiety and a degree of difficulty living with uncertainty that made them happier to give up civil liberties for a sense of security than to maintain personal freedoms and live alongside a degree of risk. My feeling about it would be that I would like a transparent process, but also I do think what is looked at should be far broader, far, far broader. So we might pat ourselves on the back in this country and say we didn't lose as many as some countries to COVID, but we lost younger, fitter people to things like missed cancer diagnoses and mental health issues and all of that kind of stuff. So I would be much less positive about how we did in COVID than many people, particularly many people from my former profession, to be honest. I think we are continuing to see the fallout of those prolonged lockdowns, but it's not the fallout of the virus. It's the fallout of how we responded to the virus. I don't know on what level it was better for elderly people in nursing homes to live an extra 3 months alone than perhaps, yes, to die 3 months sooner, but with their families around them. That's not a win in my mind. Maybe that's a win in some people's minds, and maybe some people won't like me saying that even, but certainly from my subjective point of view, if I was old, if I was in a nursing home and if I was, approaching my end of life, I would rather my end of life came a few weeks sooner but I was with my family, with my loved ones, then alone and frightened, looking at people through a window, maybe that I didn't even understand what was going on. I think that was a mistake. I think we still have an issue with children and school refusals now. Ever since we closed our schools for longer than anywhere else in Europe, 40% of primary school kids in DESH schools miss more than 20 days a year now. That's almost half of the children attending DESH schools are missing what is considered to be a sort of a hazardous level of school absences. These are real things. We have disengaged those young people from education. And there was lots of people who struggled with their mental health. So there was all of those types of things happened as a consequence of lockdown. I don't believe that you can just stop, put a pause on society, a society that has evolved over centuries into the shape that we were used to pre-COVID. Put a pause on that for about 2 years and us come out the other side without significant scars. And I think we still are bearing the significant scars and that we tend to forget what they are or the impact of them. And I think that is a mistake that we shouldn't repeat.
Now, News Talk's Ciara Kelly there. With me now is Majella Beattie from Care Champions. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Majella. Maybe you would start by telling us who Care Champions are and what is the work that you do.
Thank you, Tara. So Care Champions is a family-led volunteer advocacy group. We actually came together just prior to the pandemic because at that time, the HSE had an embargo in place for home care, which was detrimental for many older people and for family carers. So our group was in place locally when the pandemic happened. Our work is driven by the belief that older people and people who live in care settings, that they're equal rights holders. And I suppose from the work that we do, we are continuing to demand a public COVID inquiry. We feel that there needs to be accountability and systemic reform. And we also campaign for legislation around care partner so that never again will people be ever left on their own, no matter what is going on in society, without having access to a family member.
So in our inquiry, which as we know is underway but is behind closed doors, you don't know who's been before it and what they've said, nor do I. Why do you believe that even through that process that you wouldn't feel assured that older people wouldn't, as you say, have access to their families should something like this happen again? Do you not think those learnings would be there, whether they are behind closed doors, as they are here in Ireland, or whether we're hearing long public inquiries and witnesses under oath and robust questioning like they've had in the UK?
What the UK inquiry highlights, we are denying truth and justice to thousands of families. A statutory inquiry is an exercise in accountability and seeking truth, while our current evaluation is an exercise that's extremely limited in its terms of reference. And the evaluation is not fit for purpose. It lacks the power of compellability to secure documents and testimony from key witnesses. But fundamentally, its final report is delivered to the Taoiseach, and then it's at his choosing whether or not that will be actually made public. For us, I suppose, particularly for people who were so badly impacted in care settings, the only way we are going to get answers now is to have a process that will have legal power to compel those who are inside to speak honestly and fully. We thought when we started out in this process, when our loved ones were failed so heinously, we went to government, you know, in wave one saying, please stop, this is not working. It is torture what our loved ones are going through. Please stop repeating this cycle. So did many other groups, you know, and NGOs and human rights groups. They didn't listen. They continued to do the same thing. The inhumane measures and policies that did not include a human rights voice, they continue today. You know, we had a report in RTE last week where a family was denied the right to be with their loved one, died in January 2025. No lessons have been learned. They're not going to be learned by a limited review that will not allow true investigation.
Have you, or are you aware of any other advocacy groups who might have the lived experience that you have? Have you been invited at all to participate in this evaluation?
We did meet with Professor Scott just before she announced the start of the evaluation. We had a very open and nice conversation. She was saying, you know, that maybe after the 18 months, that she may be able to bring it forward to the Taoiseach, that we need more, that we actually need full public inquiry. But we feel that's just pushing the ball down the road. I know our families, who some have engaged with it, most have not engaged with the evaluation because they feel that it's behind closed doors. They're not given honour to their loved ones. It wasn't just that people died alone. It was how they lived. It was how we saw our loved ones deteriorate behind closed doors. We removed all our safeguarding supports. And the limited safeguarding supports we did have in our communities, we actually sent them into other areas that were short-staffed. So we locked people down. You know, we had one family recently telling her story about her mother's jaw muscles actually started to wear away from lack of use of talking. For each individual family member, it's hugely important for them, for their family, to be able to move on, the truth and transparency and that level of dignity is given to their loved one. But this is bigger than that. If we can say that it's okay to sacrifice a whole cohort of society because we're in a pandemic, that's setting out a message that these people were less important. You know, some of our events, we would have grandkids 6 years later breaking down, telling their story about how they never got to hug their granny or their granddad and the impact and the nightmares that they had. So this is not just a little period of time where we need to just set it aside and say it's done. A few people died, but we did well internationally. We didn't do well internationally. This is not about statistics. It has to be about the fundamental issue of rights, dignity and equality.
Magella, we're here debating, and I mean, nobody's going to take away, you know, the very strong, powerful testimony you've just given us here. And you're dealing with these families. You are one of these families. So many families have had lived experience of tragic situations, whether it was not being able to visit somebody in a nursing home, a relative passing away on their own, not being able to attend a funeral. But do you really believe that if we had the open, transparent inquiry that they've had in the UK, that it wouldn't just become a shouting match and a blame game, and that maybe the learnings from that would be less because it would be more about grabbing headlines and the, you know, the media coverage of who gave the best line on the day, rather than actually learning what went wrong, what do we need to change if this happens again?
I believe a statutory inquiry does not have to drag on for years. It needs to be very focused. I think our families need to be central in setting the terms of reference. Our families are not interested in finger pointing. What we are interested in is getting to the truth of what happened through looking at specific policies, looking at how decision making was made, what sort of experts were involved in those decision makings and the outcome. I think it can be done within a relatively short period of time, be very focused. We have such a high number of nursing homes in the country. There's no way that you would want something that's going to last for the next decade. We want something that's going to look at the overall issues that occurred in care settings, nursing homes, disability services, hospitals, home care, and really investigate it and come out with the real learnings. So we actually need to look at, how did we get this so wrong? Well, into the second, third and fourth wave of COVID, why did we get it wrong? And we can only do that if we're going to honestly sit down and really investigate it. Doesn't have to be something that'll go on for years. It doesn't have to be somebody sent a text message to one leader, sent it to another leader. That's not relevant. As far as we're concerned, these issues are too big and too important.
Magella Beattie from Care Champions, thank you very much for speaking to us here on News Talk Daily today. You can still hear the pain and the passion in your voice when you're talking about these issues, obviously very, very close to your heart. And thank you for your efforts in that regard.
Thank you, Tara.
Now, despite what Magella and indeed Ciara Kelly have to say, there are many experts who do believe Ireland's approach to investigating the handling of the pandemic is, in fact, the right way to go rather than the shouting match that we've seen across the water in the UK. So before I finish, I'd like to speak with Shamsuddin Shariati. He's a sociologist at Maynooth University who's been researching the pandemic response right across Europe. You're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Shamsuddin.
Thank you so much, Tara. I'm delighted to join you today.
Now, what in your opinion is the benefit of having an expert-led review that we have here rather than the kind of statutory inquiry that many people are calling for and that we've seen in the UK?
Well, first of all, expert-led inquiry tries to look at the structures of decision-making. But statutory inquiry only deals with blaming people or party politics. What research shows us is that usually the COVID-19 outcome in different countries can be explained by the structure of governance and administrative structures of different states rather than single decision makers or people. So an expert-led inquiry looks at how government generally operates and what are the structural issues within the decision-making processes. But statutory inquiry blames people, which is less effective in managing a crisis or pandemic. Also, there is another point as well. In an expert-led inquiry, expert-led evaluation that we have in Ireland is operating in a trustful environment with different organizations and different stakeholders. Stakeholders share their information, share the challenges they faced in decision-making and gathering data collection and making decisions. But in a statutory inquiry where people are kind of felt to be operating in a hostile environment, they are reluctant to share information, they try to cover the information or the mistakes or wrongdoings, and then it is less likely to discover the shortcomings in the structure of the government.
And our government have argued that the way it's being done here with the review is about learnings rather than punishment. Do you believe that would be the case?
Yes, exactly. Like experts can impartially investigate the decision-making processes, and that would be important to learn how to adjust the structures of decision-making for the future crisis. On the other hand, the statutory inquiry usually results in sacking people from the office, which is not efficient in addressing the administrative structures. Because if you look at the decision-making processes, usually decision-makers or policymakers receive information from the governmental bodies or expert bodies. So we should look at how they gather information in the crisis time, how they evaluate their policies, what are their calculus behind the decisions, not just one single person who made that final decision. So we should look at the process. An expert-led evaluation looks at the process, not just the final decision maker.
But what about the concerns that have been raised about the fact that maybe there aren't enough stakeholders, or that the focus of this is too narrow, that it's looking in terms of the immediate responses, the lockdowns, the number of deaths, the number of people that it may have saved, and it's not looking at the treatment of older people as they were in nursing homes, dying without their families around them, people who maybe died because they had missed cancer diagnosis, people who are still living with mental health issues arising from the pandemic, people, young kids who have never properly re-engaged back with education after missing so much time away from school.
Yes, that's an important issue as well. What we need for addressing those issues, like the accountability, it should be pursued in a separate platform. Like, for example, a government-led expert panel is not suited for accountability, seeking accountability of wrongdoings or wrong decision-makings. Such a thing should be pursued in a platform led by the judiciary or the parliament. Also, still, I think this expert-led evaluation is essential for addressing those issues, because we have to learn what was the administrative issues within the governance for the next pandemic. So if we address them in a structural manner, we won't have these issues again in the next pandemic or the next crisis.
Now, we've seen what's happening in the UK, and we've seen the response of that criticism, indeed, just a few miles up the road in Northern Ireland, that it was became party political, essentially, and it was point scoring. The response there was based on point scoring. Let's hope that we're not going to see anything like that here. I don't think we will. But talk us through what some of the other, what some of our other European neighbours, what approach are they taking to their investigations into their COVID responses?
So there are some different approaches within different countries. Like UK and France had similar parliamentary inquiries, while Sweden and Finland took a different approach. They opted for expert-led panels and independent commissions for advisory purposes. Some other countries, like Netherlands, combined both approaches. They had parliamentary inquiry for accountability, addressing accountability, while another expert-led panel addressed evaluation and structural issues. So they opted for different kind of approaches. And probably Ireland is taking the similar approach to Sweden and Finland, which is expert-led panels. It doesn't mean that they can't have another parliamentary inquiry to address accountability.
And that was my next question. Could you foresee maybe when this inquiry is completed here? I would imagine it probably will be published. I can't really see where there's room politically for a government who has that report in their hands not to publish and not to make certainly key findings available in the public domain. As and when that happens, is there room for something like a further Oireachtas inquiry then?
It would be possible for that sort of inquiry because that's important to hold people accountable. But what is more important is to look at how those people received information from governmental bodies, how those information are gathered, how consultation processes within the governmental bodies proceeded. So still there is room for another parliamentary inquiry to hold officials accountable, as we saw in some other countries like Netherlands.
Shamsuddin, thanks very much for joining us on News Talk Daily with your insights. Thanks also to Majella Beattie and Kira Kelly. Britain's COVID inquiry is exposing uncomfortable truths in public. We've chosen something a little quieter, I think, and less confrontational here. There is always the possibility, though, that it will be brought into the public domain and it could be teased out further by an Oireachtas committee. The question hanging over us all is whether that's enough not to apportion blame, but also to make sure we're better prepared for what may or may not come next. You'll find more episodes of News Talk Daily on the Go Loud app or wherever you get your podcasts. From me, though, for now, Tara Duggan. Thanks for listening.